The Sin Is Not podcast is brought to you by Alamo Drafthouse. Cody, I think this movie is about you growing up, isn't it? The Sandlot?
Yes, it is very much my biopic.
Anyway, there is a Sandlot. Listen to me. Sandlot quote along.
Sand slut.
No. By the way, is somebody driving? Are you driving, Kiko?
No.
What is happening? This sounds like someone's driving.
Anyway, I'm driving.
You fucking asshole. Anyway, there's a Sandlot quote along coming up at the Alamo Drafthouse Sunday, June 26th at Westlake's at 6:30. Guess what you get with this quote along, guys?
A signed Babe Ruth baseball?
Nope. You get that a giant dog. No. You get that goofy hat that is it Smalls wears?
Yeah.
That big giant hat? Anyway, you're killing me, Smalls.
With
the
big
all
bill?
That. Mm-hmm. You, with a big A on it, right?
Oh, that'd be cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So
I'd rather get the plastic glove.
Dude, I've seen the movie recently, and I barely remember anything about it. I was too old for that movie when it came out.
I'd rather get a kiss from Wendy Peppercorn. That'd be something.
Didn't they make a Sandlot 2? Or at least
I think so. Like a straight to video one.
Yeah. I wonder if they've ever completed the trilogy. Was James Earl Jones in that one? Was he the only returning cast member?
I think that chubby redhead kid came back.
I want to say that one of these guys has turned up on one of those BuzzFeed things. It's like, you won't believe what he's doing now, and he's all coked out. But I can't confirm or deny that. I don't know which one.
No, I think I did a. There was an anniversary recently.
Hold on.
A couple of years ago.
Hold on. We got breaking Sandlot news from Cody, Sandlot expert.
There was a Sandlot 3.
Oh, wow. When was that released?
2007, but listen to this plot. Successful, arrogant baseball superstar Tommy Santa Santarelli travels back in time to 1976 and relives his boyhood days on the Sandlot baseball team.
So it's a Sandlot movie with time travel? Was time travel... I thought it was just sort of like kids' imagination thing. I didn't know there was like fantastical elements to Sandlot. Was there? I don't remember anything like that.
I don't think so. But Luke Perry's in it.
Is James Earl Jones in it?
I don't think so. I think he's just doing Arby's commercials these days.
James Earl Jones, by the way.
I mean, they made up the whole dog story in their head, so that was fantastical in its own right, right?
Well, yeah, see, that's why that's what I thought. I didn't think there was any actual real fantastical elements to their lives. But now that time travel's in the fucking mix, who knows? Anyway, that is the Sandlot Quote Along, Alamo Drafthouse, West Lakes, Sunday, June 26th at 6:30 p.m. You can get your tickets.
They're also having those quote-alongs at other theaters as well.
Oh, yes. There is one, I believe, on this Tuesday, which I didn't mention because who knows who's listening when someone's listening
to
the show.
I think there's one a week from today also at Stone.
There's also, Sunday, June 12th in the afternoon, 2 p.m. But it's summer, man. What do you need a Sunday afternoon for? Take that crap to Sunday night at Westlakes. I don't know. Go to whatever one you want, whatever's closest to you. How about that?
Convenient locations all around San Antonio.
Right. If you're up north, go to Stone Oak. If you're in the central, go to Park North. On the west side, there's West Lakes. That's the one I like to spend the most time at, frankly. That's the OG.
I like West Lake.
I do too. Anyway, get your tickets at drafthouse.com. Let's go ahead and start the show.
In a world filled with movie podcasts, three critics from the juggernaut media market of San Antonio decided to change the entire course of the internet. A feat attempted by many and conquered by many. To produce a relatively listenable podcast. Devastating truth bombs.
Brace yourselves, guys. The Muppets are puppets. You know that, right?
No! Wait! Okay, no!
They're puppets.
Don't ruin it!
And...
Muppets are puppets.
This is gonna...
Hard facts.
Yeah, not Kevin Feige or Feig, whatever. I think it's Feige.
Is it really?
I have no idea.
Asking the important questions.
What is that? What was that I just saw right now? It was like a fat Iron Man.
That's a Hulkbuster.
Hulkbuster armor. That's
how he fights Iron Man.
This is the Cine Snob Podcast.
Welcome to episode 81 of the Cine Snob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Villafania.
And I'm Kiko Martinez.
The road warrior, Kiko Martinez.
No, not anymore. I'm in the parking lot now.
We won't tell everybody.
Waiting for somebody to pick me up and take me to work.
where are you at? What parking lot are you in?
In the Home Depot parking lot.
Yeah, because you're going to buy some tools, right?
I'm coming here to buy some. I don't know what the hell I need to buy
now.
I hate being a handyman. I'm not a handyman. So
are you going to go into the store while we're doing the show?
Yeah. Hey, where are your anchors?
Now, I just wonder why you didn't wait until you were done with the show to go, because you're going to sit in the parking lot the whole time now, right?
It's kind of more quiet in the car than it is at the house. So.
And it's about to get even more crowded, huh? Pretty soon?
And it's about, it's about to get more loud. Louder, I mean. So anyway, yeah. So yeah, I'm not sure.
Enjoy these last few episodes of Kiko on our podcast.
I'm not sure how much of a handyman or handyman you guys are at the house, but I'm definitely not. So these kind of things are not what I want to be doing on a Sunday early evening.
I hold my own pretty well, and that's I'm a good handyman too.
I'm worthless.
No, I mean I kind of grew into it. I've owned my own house for 15 years now. In the house I'm currently renting now, I've made some repairs. But I can look at the stuff in my old house, like when I first started messing with it, and see like 15 years later the stuff I did, and it's way better.
Okay.
So, but you're replacing an anchor for a curtain? Like that's kids stuff, man. That's easy. Those things practically...
Yeah, I mean, if you YouTube it, it is for me, I guess.
Well, what's to YouTube? You just put the thing in the wall and then put the other thing in the thing. Like,
that's what she said.
I YouTube that too, right? Like, what? How do I do this? I think
you
that's
watch YouTube tutorials on that.
I think you're thinking of RedTube for that one, or YouPorn, whichever one you prefer. Real quick, we want to talk about a thing we did yesterday, or actually we did earlier this week. We were guest critics, I guess, of a rotating panel for the Critics Circle. It's the official radio show for the Houston Film Critics Society. It airs on RadioBrave.com, a digital radio station. You can get it on TuneIn, the TuneIn app. I can tell my Alexa or my Amazon Echo Dot to listen to TuneIn. You guys know what that thing is, right?
Yeah.
Where I can just, I can just yell at my robot that's named Alexa to play stuff for me.
Alexa!
I'm yelling at it. Somebody probably, my neighbors probably think that I have a, like a maid named Alexa that I'm just telling to play stuff for me.
Why would you make your maid play you music?
I don't know. Because it doesn't do anything kinky, I guess, or or practical. So, I mean, they would have to think it was just some, like, somebody that was employed by me. It's not like, Alexa, clean the toilets. It's, Alexa, play that Star Wars album I download. Yeah, yeah. No, so we were on, we were the, this week's rotating guest critics. Is that how you say that? What the thing
is?
Yeah,
I guess so.
We were the critics this week speaking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Out of the Shadows, Popstar, and Wiener. Coincidentally, things we're going to be covering in this episode. So if you've already listened to the radio show,
we're just going to be repeating ourselves.
Spoiler alert. I think we're going to be cussing more in this one because we weren't sure what we could get away with. So we stayed pretty clean. And there'll probably be
very few wiener puns.
Right. There'll probably be a lot more wiener puns this time around. Just because, you know, why not, right?
We're children.
Essentially. Give that a listen. It's on RadioBrave.com. I believe there are various times that it plays. The one time I know firmly in my head is on Thursdays at 5 p.m. It debuts on Saturdays at 3 p.m. So It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of our colleagues from the Houston Film Critics Society you'll hear. Everybody's got a totally different angle on things, so you're not going to necessarily get the same opinions one week to the next. We're the jerk offs that like The Sandlot and stuff, and you've got other people talking about how we make a bunch of dick jokes, and other people talking about the value of cinema in their lives and how it saves some how it saved people from persecution over the years. And we're like, yeah, wieners are funny, but. So anyway, give that a listen. That is radiobrave.com, the Critics Circle. Anything else to tease before we jump right into this these reviews this week, guys? Nothing? Nothing?
I don't think so.
If you're at Home Depot right now, which you won't be because this wasn't going to be live, I just want somebody to come harass Kiko. But if you ever see
now, wait until you upload it.
Okay.
If you find him in the store, just tell him he's not a man.
Yeah, if you ever see Kiko at Home Depot, just go, dude, just call someone. Like if you're a stern older man, like with rough hands. I'm just saying those words already. Like, I want you to come up and just pat Kiko on the shoulder and be like, son, you don't know what you're doing. And then just walk away.
I thought you were going to say, if you're a stern older man with rough hands, call me.
Please find me on Twitter at Jared Kingery. email me at... No, this is getting out of hand, so let's go ahead and move on to reviews.
Here are this week's reviews.
First up, we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows.
Oh, boy.
We got to go now. We only have a 30-second window. You know the plan.
Dude?
What?
He jumped.
He jumped?
Uh-huh.
All right, one for all.
Wait, you don't have a shoot.
I don't need a shoot. I got my board. Oh, this is awesome. Ouch.
What would Vin Diesel do?
No regrets! No fear!
Is he coming in kind of fast?
As Shredder joins forces with mad scientist Baxter Stockman and henchmen Bebop and Rocksteady to take over the world, the Turtles must confront an even greater nemesis, the notorious Krang. We all three saw this one. Kiko, since you are the Ninja Turtles fan in residence.
Are you kidding me? Not as big as you, man.
Well, I can't start with myself, so you're going to
start.
Yeah,
no, that's cool. But I mean, you're a bigger fan than I am. I mean, I grew up with it. I mean, from the late 80s, early 90s, and it was a big part of my childhood. Got home from school every day, watched the cartoon religiously, my favorite character was Michelangelo, because he was a party dude, and so it was a big deal when the movie hit in 1990. I don't remember liking it as much as my classmates did. I was really disappointed that they didn't bring in a lot of the elements of the cartoon. I remember everybody was pissed off that Bebop and Rocksteady weren't in it, and that, you know, Krang wasn't in it, that the foot soldiers were all weird kids instead of, like, I don't know, this army.
They were robots in the cartoon.
Exactly. The robot. And then, seeing this, I felt like it was like the movie that we wanted when we were 10 or 12. And so I was kind of excited because, you know, they're bringing in these characters that kind of, you know, were staples in the franchise for me. And I thought, to be honest with you, I thought this was the best Ninja Turtle movie that they've made out of the first three, and that came out in the 90s, and then they rebooted it in 2014, which I thought was terrible. I thought the 2014 reboot was really bad. This one was not bad. I enjoyed. You know what I really like about these Ninja Turtles is that they all seem to have like their. I mean, they all have their own personalities, but in this one, it seemed like they were really different, and they really their personalities were separated in some way. I like the way like Michelangelo's shorter than all of them, and
Donatello's a skinny nerd.
Yeah, and they all have different faces. It's really weird because, I mean, I remember in the cartoon and in the older movies, I mean, you just take off the, if you took off their masks, you couldn't tell who was who, right? And in this one, they kind of go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in the live action film, they were different, but yeah, in the cartoon, I mean, the cartoon is just cheap animation,
right?
That's of which true. I own several animation cells from, but that's
were they really different in the puppetry one? I don't remember.
They're not very different, but their faces are slightly different.
Well, in this one, they're really different. I mean, Raphael is like the muscle, so he's like really, he looks like a linebacker kind of turtle, and Michelangelo's a like smaller, bulky one, and it's just funny. I like the way that they kind of break it down like that. But yeah, this story is very very simple, but it's very easy to get through. It doesn't go all over the place, and a lot of the CGI characters themselves, they're the ones that really stand out for me. None of the humans really did anything for me in this one, especially Casey Jones. I was really disappointed with that character. And then Megan Fox, of course. When you cast somebody like Megan Fox, you wish that she would get a little bit more to do other than making foxy things, but apparently they don't know what to do with her anymore other than put her in a schoolgirl uniform. So I can't really totally recommend this movie, but there was a lot of fun things that happened that I enjoyed. So, yeah, what did you guys think?
Cody, go ahead.
Well, you know, the first movie I wasn't a huge fan of. It was kind of a silly. It was very juvenile.
You think that? Which, I mean, wait, you're talking about the 2014 version?
Yeah.
See, I just thought that. I don't think that was silly at all. I think it was too dour and dark. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I thought it was super goofy, and for whatever reason, and I don't really know why in particular, but this one I was on board with a lot more than I thought I would be, and for a lot longer than I thought I would be. I think that there's a lot of really cool and fun action sequences in this. There's a really awesome, like, skydiving, but falling out of a plane sequence.
That's the clip that we played. That whole sequence is, I think, the standout of the film.
Yeah, that's really well done. I think that Krang looks really cool, like really weird and gross and stuff like that. I didn't really care for Bebop and Rocksteady. I thought that was kind of a dumb thing, but I think the biggest problem the movie has is it's too long. It wears out its welcome just a tad. I mean, it's almost 2 hours long. I think you could have shaved 15, 30 minutes out of this and had a pretty decent, pretty good, like, family movie. As it stands, though, it's entertaining. You know, I had fun with it, and I was not expecting to at all. It's not breaking ground or anything, but, you know, it's enough to keep your attention for its runtime. So it's funnier than the first one. I think a lot of jokes landed a lot better. I think Will Arnett is pretty good in this, in terms of, you know, being a comedic actor that's kind of placed in this weird world. I agree that Megan Fox really has nothing to do here, other than wear a schoolgirl outfit and look hot, which she does well in this film. But
I guess people want their April O'Neil to be a heroine, and there's nothing for these people to do. And I think that's the biggest problem with the film is the humans. There's really nothing for any of the humans to do, and I think they're all pretty much wasted.
When you have somebody like Lauren Linney coming in, Oscar nominated actress, and she's just kind of a stock character. I mean,
I'm fine with that. I'm more so concerned about the characters that should have some adventure to them. Like Casey Jones, I think, is a big giant wasted opportunity. I know, Kiko, you're very familiar with the Casey Jones in the live action film from 1990, mm-hmm. Played by Elias Koteas.
He was mysterious, and you didn't know where he really came from. And
yeah, he's just a dangerous darker. Vigilante, you know, and kind of a bad boy character that, you know, is a love interest for April, and then a partner with the Turtles after initially being, you know, their adversary, however briefly. But this one, he's just kind of a bland, he's a cop, you know, he's a corrections officer, and then he just sort of happens to have a hockey mask and decides to wear it. You know, there's no real motivation behind Casey Jones at all in this film. I think it, it has, it threatens to make him interesting when he's, you know, when they bring him down to the sewer and are kind of giving him shit and giving him the right.
I really like that.
Yeah. I thought that that was, I thought it was a good scene. Again, the turtles, I think we've talked about this several times before, but I think the turtles are really great in this movie. I think that that's by far the best characterization of the Ninja Turtles that we've gotten in this, the sixth film based on the characters. And I think that that's, it's like, I told a friend this, describing the movie, it's like, take the Michael Bay Transformers movies that don't really make the Transformers characters at all, but plug in like the perfect versions, perfect live action versions of the Ninja Turtles cartoon into that same formula. Like the plot is still shit. The humans are dumb and have nothing to do. The music is kind of shitty and lame and not really, you know, what am I trying to say? Distinct at all. But then they get the turtles and Krang and even for me, Bebop and Rocksteady pretty much exactly right. Yeah. And I think that's enough to power the movie all the way through for me. I don't think it felt too long. I really wish the plot had been better, because then this probably would have been like just the perfect Ninja Turtles, the perfect Ninja Turtles movie. I still think the 1990 film is a better movie as a movie, but this one really was a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, I agree. The CGI was probably the best thing for me. I did like Bebop and Rocksteady a lot. And maybe it was just because I've been waiting for them for 25 years. So
can we talk about how just amazingly like true to the design they were with Bebop and Rocksteady? Like Bebop had a purple mohawk and those stupid sunglasses. Like it's something that you would have killed for in 1990, and it took, you know, 26 years to get to this point.
Yeah, because how lame would it have looked with, you know, somebody in a costume like that? I remember part two, how pissed off everybody was when they introduced those two new mutants.
Toka and Razar, the wolf and the and the turtle, which were apparently it was a rights issue. Still, though, for what we're talking about, the creature effects in the first Ninja Turtles film, at least, were pretty amazing. I mean, those animatronics were state of the art at the time. That being said, the CGI in this one, I mean, for all intents and purposes, those turtles in this movie are real living things. Yeah. Like that's how good the special effects are. You know, I think it's probably the best use of this motion capture stuff we've seen since, what's the most recent Planet of the Apes? Is that Dawn or is that Rise? I can never remember the
Dawn.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I think it's the best use of the motion capture that we've seen since Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Just as a sense of like, these are real things. Like, as far as I'm concerned, these are real living things.
You want them to be real living things.
I want them to be my friends. I think that they actually made some subtle changes from the first film to this one to make them more distinct and a little less hulking giants. Because I think that was one of my big problems with the first one, is that they were all just so ginormous monsters. Just such ginormous monsters. And I think, you know, they made Donatello basically a real average human size and gave him all the gadgets and stuff. I just think it's really well done. I think there's some, if the plot was better, it would be really, really fantastic as a film altogether. But I think the chemistry with the turtles and the characterization of the turtles really makes this thing hum, as it were.
Cool.
Grades, guys.
I can't totally entirely get on board with it still. And I still had a few more problems than I did things that I actually enjoyed about it. So I'm going to give this one a C+.
Cody?
I think it is just barely good enough to recommend, based on, you know, it's both its faults and its successes. So I would give it a B-.
I'm at a B. I was faltering for a little while watching the movie, but I think it all comes together with the turtles, and Krang especially, I think, was well done.
So do you think of a one-off movie just with Krang and his...
Oh, no, not at all. I did love...
I want to know where he came from. Where did he come from? Is there more Krangs out there?
Well, I did love... One of the things I loved, and this is a minor spoiler, I guess, that no one dies in the movie.
None
of the characters die, like none of the villains and anything. And it's kind of, it's like Krang just is like, I'll be back. And, you know, meanwhile, all these other Marvel films and X-Men films and stuff feel the need to kill off every single villain along the way. And that's why you get shitty villains, which Cody and I were talking about last night when we were having our pillow talk.
We were spooning.
Like, I remember, I really wish they would have went back and because Baxter Stockman kind of I don't want to spoil anything, but he kind of disappears at the end of the movie and never comes back. I really wanted them to return back to him real quick at the end, like maybe a credits sequence where a little fly lands on him or something.
Let's move on to our next movie, Pop Star.
Welcome to the future, bitches.
It's Connor's song.
Oh. This is my fave, though. I like the freezer one.
Listen to this, homies. We can upload your entire album to fridges, washer dryers, blenders, and microwaves across the country.
You can do that?
Yes, nerd. It's just Wi-Fi jibber-jabber. It's not a big deal.
This is that next, man. I told y'all, Deborah's a genius.
It's true. And it is also pronounced Deborah.
Deborah? Oh, that's very cool. What's the origin of that?
I believe Deborah?
When it becomes clear that his solo album is a failure, a former boy band member does everything in his power to maintain his celebrity status. You're the resident Lonely Island expert, Cody. What'd you think of Pop Star?
Well, so for anyone who doesn't know, the Lonely Island is the team of Andy Samberg, Yorma Taccone, and Akiva Schaffer. Most famously from the SNL digital shorts, those guys created that and kind of became huge off of that. I Lazy Sunday was the one that really took off first.
Yeah.
And then Dick in a Box was the next really big one. And then,
I'm
you know,
the
from there, it kind of, okay. And,
what?
I thought you made some comment about Dick in the Box being a big one, but anyway.
No, I said, I'm on a boat.
Oh, I'm on a boat was there too. And so, you know, after that, it kind of spawned this musical career for them. Like, and they're like Grammy nominated, like musicians. And so they kind of branched off of SNL. Andy Samberg went to do films and the other guys did some other stuff. Like Yorma directed MacGruber. And I think Akiva directed The Watch, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, this is the first time they've ever done something that's been their product. They were all in Hot Rod and co-wrote and directed it, but so they had some other fingers in that pie. So
what?
You guys haven't heard that expression before?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he did direct The Watch, by the way, Akiva Schaffer.
Yeah. So this is the first time that they've really had their own project, a film project. And also Judd Apatow directs or produces on this film. I think the film is essentially a SNL sketch that's stretched a little bit too thin. The music should be the strong suit of the film, given their pedigree. And the music is all really well produced, and it sounds like stuff that's like on the radio and popular and stuff now. But I don't think that the songs are ultimately that funny. I think there's a couple of them that hit. There's one that's that kind of makes fun of the Same Love Macklemore song, where Andy Samberg's character is talking about gay rights while making it abundantly clear that he's not gay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And then there's a couple other ones, but there's stuff like the catchphrase song that kind of misses for me. It's just kind of words smooshed together. I don't think that the Bin Laden song is that good. That was on SNL this past week. I think that the music part is not as good. I think that the movie is pretty good when it's making like really pointed references, and criticisms of specific things. Like there's a subplot in there where, Connor Faurel, Andy Samberg's character, signs a deal with an appliance manufacturer. And so every appliance, like ovens and refrigerators, play his new music when it opens.
That's the clip that we played.
Okay, yeah. And so that's kind of the take on the U2 putting or Apple putting U2's new album on every device that they had. And I think that that stuff's really funny. And I think that there's a lot of humor that comes from the failure of the new album that his character puts out. I think there's a really funny scene where he's reading reviews of his new album, and Rolling Stone gave him the shit emoji.
Yeah. I think that.
Go ahead.
I think we talked about this before. You and I said that when the absurdity takes over, I think is when it's the most funny. When like the people throwing their toasters like out, like just smashing toasters on the lawn.
And there's a really funny, and I think that Akiva actually gets the funniest stuff in here. Like the one thing that made me laugh more than anything was when he's on the phone and he's holding a baby goat, and Yorma's like, "What is that noise?" And he's like, "That's my girlfriend. We're having sex right now." And it's just like a goat that's going.
Yeah.
So I think that it sort of runs its course and it runs out of steam fast. I think it's too reliant on celebrity cameos too, that just don't hit very well. There's some that hit. I mean, there's a couple that are pretty good, but ultimately, I just wish it was a lot better, funnier. And I think it should have been a little bit more specific in its takedown of the music industry.
Kiko, what'd you think?
Yeah, as a whole, I didn't find it too funny myself. I wasn't as familiar as Cody was with the Lonely Island. I mean, I've seen a lot of the digital shorts. And I think that they do a great job with the music. And in this movie, too, I enjoyed most of the music. And I would have really liked to have seen them, just create some music videos for these songs instead of an entire feature film. Because, it stretches too thin. It's like a sketch and kind of, wears out its welcome, like we said before. I mean, Andy Samberg is a really, really funny guy. I'm not really familiar with the other two guys too much, but I only know Andy Samberg because of SNL. And I've always enjoyed him. He was one of the funnier, newer cast members when he was on Saturday Night Live that I actually enjoyed. So, as a whole, I think that a lot of the jokes were kind of one-offs for me. There was a few funny scenes where I laughed, but put it all together in one feature film and it just didn't really add up to anything except for, a mockumentary type film that hits and misses in a lot of different places. So overall, I just really didn't laugh as much as I would have liked. So that's where I am with Pop Star.
I think there's some really interesting satire in here. Like you talked about the I'm Not Gay song. I loved every time they cut to the TMZ parody. that's one of my – I talk about this all the time. Being in TV, I appreciate the weird formatting of TMZ because it's – have you ever watched TMZ, either of you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like a pitch meeting.
Yeah. The whole show is a pitch meeting for a show that never happens. And it's such a weird format and such a unique format that it's like, wait, how's this? What? Like, are they making a show that no one's watching? Anyway, that's my that's one of my guilty pleasures is just thinking about how that works. And the parody here is Will Arnett again is the Harvey Levin stand-in, and he keeps drinking from increasingly ridiculous like cups.
Yeah.
Eric Andre and who's the other comedian with him? Mike Wrigley is in there. Eric Andre
and Chelsea Peretti.
Chelsea Peretti, that's right. Just as the writers or whoever they are pitching, and it just gets increasingly crazy and weird. I think stuff like that is the funniest. But when it comes to when it comes to the plot moving forward, and by the time it finally lurches to where you know it's going to be, I guess about the hour mark, I was done. I was like, I'm totally out of gas with this story. I'm ready for it to be done. And like you said, Cody, it feels like a skit stretched way too long. It feels like this would have made a nice 45-minute sort of parody special thing, similar to what Andy Samberg did last year with the 7 Days in Hell, with Kit Harington, the tennis thing that was pretty crazy and weird. And some it weirdly kind of snaps out of the mockumentary format a few times here and there. Did you notice that?
It's oddly pieced together because it does do that, and then in the middle of it, they'll cut to like a music video and show like a full music video. And I don't know. It's just strangely structured, and I just don't know. It feels like an idea that never really, you know, puts it together. You know, there are some funny parts, of course, and there's an interesting use of male nudity in the film.
Yeah, that's probably the funniest scene, and I think that's where another part where it snaps out of the mockumentary format, and it's just sort of like a normal.
I can't
movie.
Remember.
Anyway, I kind of wonder if what the pitch for this movie was. Like, was it just, hey, we've got these videos, let's do this, and then they kind of built the movie around it? I think that marketing wise, it's probably a little too sincere. Because I think I sent you a picture of a shirt that I got at the screening, Cody, and it looks like a normal concert shirt. Like, there's not really anything funny about it, and I think that's part of the problem with Andy Samberg is that he looks like he's a handsome dude, and he looks like he could be a pop star, and he doesn't look ridiculous enough.
Well, and it's clearly not connecting with audiences because the box office numbers are atrocious.
Yeah, it opened in eighth place, I believe.
Under 5 million.
I just think it doesn't embrace the absurdity enough. I mean, it's obviously like the guys obviously love the genre and love sending it up, you know, this pop music stuff. But I just don't think it's coming across a little less mean-spirited than, well, I don't know, mean-spirited.
It needed to be more mocking.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it embraces it a little too much.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But it's got a lot of laughs, so there is that. It is really funny. I think one of my favorite funniest parts was the when Yorma playing the DJ, who was the former band member in the Style Boys, was given that weird robot helmet that shoots like that aircraft landing light beam into the sky and plays like some horrible sound.
It's a sound from the War of the Worlds.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
That's just such an absurd moment that I loved it. I'm like, why would you need that? Why does it do this?
One of my favorite, and see, I think that a lot of the funniest parts of this movie are really small cutaway stuff or throwaway gags. Like there's a scene where Akiva's character on his farm is showing a bunch of different types of weed.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's like a bunch of things, and then he goes frog jizz, and it's like this mason jar of this, like it's just such a weird scene and so funny.
Well, and it literally ends on a gag that had kind of been building, but it's really subtle. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I couldn't even tell what it was.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. It's too subtle. There's like, if you watch the background in certain parts, there's something lurking here and there.
Is there?
Yes. Especially I couldn't tell what it was, but there's a scene, there was like an interview scene, and there's something on the couch behind Andy Samberg's character. And then the very last interview stand-up he's doing, that thing attacks. And
part of the reason I think is because the aspect ratio was messed up on the theater we saw, and so it didn't take up the full screen, so it looked like it was, yeah.
Oh, I see.
But I was so confused. I did not see that at all.
I didn't see that. I know what you're talking about, but I didn't see the foreshadowing of it at all.
All right, so what are your grades, guys?
I'm going with the C+. I can't recommend it. I wish it was a lot better than it was, but that isn't to say it doesn't have its moments.
Kiko?
It had a lot less funny moments for me. Even though there are a couple, and I like the music. I thought the music was fine. C for me.
Wow. I'm right on the edge. I think a C+. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next movie, Wiener.
Why are they filming you?
I don't know. I most of the time I don't know why they're filming.
Are you somebody I'm supposed to know?
It's Republicans wrapping their arms around Republicans rather than doing the right thing on behalf of the heroes.
It was an absolute pleasure to see a Democrat not cowering.
Married to one of Hillary Clinton's closest advisors.
You never back down from anybody.
A photo of an anonymous man's bulging underwear
was tweeted from Congressman Wiener's account.
Today I am announcing my resignation from Congress.
Bye-bye, pervert!
the punchline is true about me. I did the dumb thing, but I did a lot of other things too. Running for mayor was the straightest line to clean up the mess that I had made.
This is Anthony Weiner calling. Yes, I'm not Anthony Weiner, the one running for mayor.
Why do you think you deserve the second chance?
I didn't want to answer.
I'm giving you the answer.
I thought you were thinking about it. I thought you were trying
to think. No, I'm talking words.
This is an examination of disgraced New York Congressman Anthony Weiner's mayoral campaign and the controversy that followed. Now, we all saw Weiner. Who wants to talk about their Weiner first? I'm sorry.
Did you say examination? Is that what you said?
Of a Weiner? Yeah, an examination of disgraced New York Congressman Anthony Weiner's Weiner. Anyway, so, yeah, the name, it's a big pun, and it's played for laughs in the film, too. So, who wants to start? Kiko.
How could it not play for laughs anywhere? I mean, I don't think it was really played for laughs in the film other than the fact that his last name was Weiner.
There's the Colbert joke in there.
I mean, that's just...
That he got into trouble because he sent out a picture of his Weiner.
Yeah. But the Colbert there's the Colbert joke in there where it's from the Colbert Report where he talks about the Carlos Danger name that he used, and he's like, he wouldn't want to use a ridiculous name like Anthony Weiner.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
But poor guy. I mean, I really feel bad for people that have like weird last names like that.
Man, fuck this guy.
He's
probably a great public servant, but
yeah, exactly. I mean, I think he had a lot of good ideas. I mean, like,
sounds like you're talking about Hitler.
Yourself into a hole. Huh?
Sounds like you're talking about Hitler. Like, look, he probably had a lot of great ideas.
That's how every defense of Hitler
yeah,
starts.
Yeah, look, he had a lot of good ideas.
Well, I mean, I didn't follow this story when it happened as much as a news buff might, even though I do consider myself a news buff. But the oddity of it just really was just like one of those you can't believe it, or it has to be this true, but it's so weird, it's Stranger than Fiction type stuff. So to kind of get it all together in this one package was a really interesting way to, kind of show the audience like what was happening between, what was happening during this time of his life. And I think it was really brave of him to actually let people in. And the film actually opens with him like questioning himself, like, why the hell am I letting these filmmakers make a documentary on my scandal? And to be honest with you, I have no idea why he let him do that.
Because he's a fucking narcissist.
That's maybe. I think maybe like he just wanted to, finally, get it out there. And I think that
he wanted to show us the wiener to the world.
He wanted to show us.
He wanted to expose himself to the world.
But to be honest, I mean, I really liked this documentary. I thought it was a really funny type of, it was almost like a mockumentary to me if it wasn't true, of just this really bizarre campaign that happened a few years ago. And I think I kind of empathize with him a little bit. At the same time, it was kind of just way too weird to do that, and I really felt bad for his wife through it. So I mean, there was like it was back and forth for me. I thought it was funny. I felt bad for certain people in the movie, but at the same time, it was just very compelling to me as somebody, especially in this day and age, or at this time of 2016, where I'm really following the campaign that's happening right now, to be able to see like the inside workings of something as weird as this. So. I enjoyed me a little Weiner.
So Kiko was up and down on Weiner and really liked how far inside Weiner got. Cody, what's your take on that Weiner?
Well, I think that if there's a general theme of Weiner, it's that the guy has no self-control. And I think that is the best part of the movie, because down to the scandal itself, and you see several times in this movie, the guy has no self-control.
Yeah.
And he cannot help himself. And it's fascinating to watch a guy kind of go down in flames and know that he's going down in flames while he's doing it. And I think the best parts of this movie are when he's a loose cannon, ready to erupt at any moment. So I think that in those moments, like, so there's a bunch of things that happen. Like, he's on a talk show, and a guy tries to, like, get dirty and get down in the mud with him, and he goes along with it, and you know, he's watching the next day, and it's an interview that ultimately sunk his campaign. And you see him, like, giggling and watching him, watching it. Yeah, the next day on his computer.
That's the narcissism that I'm talking about. Like, he goes in and just drops these bombs, like, and is fighting back hardcore. And then the next day he's just watching it giggling. And while his wife, who we should add, her name is Huma Abedin. She's like Hillary Clinton's top advisor, a mega powerful woman in Washington, who has to stand beside this fucking jackass as he keeps self-immolating himself. That was
there's a lot of friction between him and his wife, and she gives a lot of she's just staring daggers into him several times, and I think that is so interesting. Like, there's so much subtext going on here that's not really explored, because this is a very powerful woman in the political and world, and she probably can't be that vulnerable if she wants to be a major part of a presidential campaign like she is right now.
Yeah, there's a scene where her and Wiener are on a phone together, and she is just fucking drilling him, like, just setting him on fire with her eyes.
Yeah,
like you stupid son of a bitch is like what a thought bubble should pop over her head in, like, old school blind date style. But
yeah. I think that when this movie is just kind of talking about the campaign and showing the campaign, it's a little mundane. I think that anytime Anthony is sort of getting himself into trouble, I mean, like, there's no question he's a good politician. There's, you know, he's really fast on his feet, and he's a very passionate speaker. But the moments in which he just cannot control himself are really good, and it's really funny to see him sort of, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's really funny to watch him go down in flames.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, he was a congressman from New York who was initially caught sending pictures of his dick, essentially, in his underwear, like, to people on Twitter, right? He was DMing people.
I believe so.
So, of course, somebody came forward and exposed Wiener for doing this. And he was initially not going to resign from Congress, and he finally did. And it was a huge, huge scandal as far as scandals go with this stuff. But then he ran for mayor of New York City after Michael Bloomberg. Which this is why I was unfamiliar with this story, because it's a really, really New York story. You know, this is a New York mayor. I don't give a shit about the New York mayor. You know, I know who it is, but, you know, the mayoral race, there's always at least five or six crazies in it anyway. It threatened to lose me in that fact going forward at the beginning, because I didn't remember that the second scandal happened. So I was like, oh, I don't want to see this guy's redemption story. And then the bomb drops, and turns out he was Facebook messaging what was her thing? Sydney Leathers was her name.
Yeah. Pineapple.
Pineapple is where's her code word for the campaign. And she just another thing of him fucking blowing up, and it replays the messaging with him. I assume that's verbatim. I don't know what you guys think, where it shows the Facebook messaging interaction or the text messaging.
So, yeah.
Where he sees an inn and just fucking goes for it. You know, he sees a woman that's kind of flirting with him, and he just fucking, he's all in right away.
But he never meets these women.
Right.
Never.
Yeah. But he all in to start flirting with him, to start sending him fucking pictures of his dick and shit, which, you know, it was something that happened after the original scandal, and that's why, you know, people got pissed off at him because he lied to them about it. He said he was done, and then he kept doing it, and then he kept fighting it until finally he ended up, I think, in like with 9% of the vote.
You know what's really fascinating that I really liked, and maybe more so than any other element of it, was watching them try to spin the PR behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
I think there's some pretty brutal honesty from like one of the campaign managers, I don't know which one, just about how like, hey, you need to fucking tell us this shit. Like, stop lying to us.
Yeah. Yeah, political PR is such an interesting thing, just for me coming from a PR industry. What you should, I don't know how much you're watching of the presidential race right now, but the campaign people for Trump are nuts, man. Can spin a fucking story like you never believe. Like, I don't understand how they do it, but some of them are just off their rockers.
Well, that's one of the things about Donald Trump, I think, that's that maybe might make something like this Wiener thing seem quaint by comparison.
Right.
In that, you know, Donald Trump isn't playing by any kind of rules and hasn't been able to be bullied out of a campaign.
No, I mean he talked about how big his dick was during a debate and he won the nomination. Like,
so, you know, who knows what the future holds for politics. But this was an interesting slice of what happened in 2013. I guess the movie is meant to show that he goes on to recover and is now a speaker, political speaker on, a pundit, guest pundit here and there. It's a shame because it sounds like he, you know, from the snippets that they play, it sounds like he's a real people's, politician. But he just can't keep his fucking dick in his pants and not send pictures to people online. So,
and like I said, that's the theme. The guy has no self-restraint and it's doomed him.
Yeah. All right. What are grades, guys?
I like this one. I'm giving it a B.
Cody?
I think I'm at a B minus probably. I could maybe see a B too, but,
I think I'm at a B right now just because it's so interesting to watch him kind of blow up, and fall apart. I mean, that's really the only appeal to this thing is that
he's an interesting character. I mean, even if he didn't do all of this stuff, I mean, he's one of those New York guys that.
Oh, come on. No way. Who gives a shit about this guy if he didn't start showing his dick?
You don't think
so?
No.
Outside of New York City? No way, man.
Well, I mean, I think he has enough personality to
But the personality is his narcissism. His narcissism and his like Cody said, like his lack of self-control.
That's what I mean. I'm saying if the whole dick thing didn't happen, I think he still would have done something to get attention. I mean, I think that's his personality is big enough to where he didn't have to.
He was definitely rising in the political world.
He was almost fully erect.
Erect?
Yeah. Erected into office.
Whatever. He almost got erected. Oh, I mean elected. Anyway, let's move on to something we missed last week, X-Men Apocalypse.
Ever since the world found out about mutants in 73, there have been cults who see them as some kind of second coming or sign of God. I was tracking one of them. They call themselves a Shir En Sebanur, named after an ancient being they believe to be the world's first.
World's first what?
The world's first mutant. These describe a specific set of powers greater than any man could possess.
An all-powerful mutant.
Exactly. And wherever this being was, he always had four principal followers, disciples, protectors he would imbue with powers.
Like the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Got that one from the Bible.
Or the Bible got it from him.
With the emergence of the world's first mutant, Apocalypse, the X-Men must unite to defeat his extinction-level plan. Cody, I know you just watched this movie, so it's freshest in your mind.
Yeah.
What'd you think of X-Men Apocalypse?
Well, you know, on the heels of what I think was probably the best X-Men movie in the franchise,
I can't say that.
Bextman.
There we go.
Yeah.
Wiener. Oh.
Dick. I thought that Days of Future Past was great, like a really great movie. And this one, is not so much. This movie is, pretty much a disaster, I think, from the get-go. It juggles like 13 storylines at once. And not only does it juggle 13 storylines, but man, it's the same storylines from the last two movies. Like Magneto's storyline is literally the same exact storyline he's had for the past two movies. And it's just getting old and repetitive, and it takes forever to get going. Like the first hour of this movie is set up, and no action happens until, you know, the very end. And it's 2.5 hours, and it's so long, and it feels like it's 4 hours. Oscar Isaac, I think I told you, he always looks like he's in a perpetual state of orgasm in this movie, like with his like with his eyes rolled in the back of his head and like putting his hands up. And
I think that's the only reason I like this movie.
I think there's some interesting ideas in here, and I think that Apocalypse, like his powers are kind of cool. Like when he like takes like sand off of the building and like decapitates three people with him, that's kind of a cool scene. I think the best element of this movie is Nightcrawler. I've always found Nightcrawler really cool, especially in the older ones. And I think that that's maybe the most interesting part of this movie. I think the Jean Grey stuff with Sophie Turner is a total dud. I think that Fassbender is wasting his time here, because all of his stuff is intriguing and he's good, but it's like he's in a different movie at times. Like he's in this serious drama. And everyone else is in, superhero land. But I just wish that the stories, from the get-go, it's been like Jennifer Lawrence's character is not sure what she wants to do. And then Magneto is good, and then he's bad, and then is he good or is he bad? Like, that's that's literally Magneto's storyline through three movies.
Yeah.
So, I just don't think that anything is really particularly good in here. I didn't even think that the Quicksilver scene this time around was that great. It's fine. It's neat, but I just think that this thing is a colossal misfire on every level.
Kiko?
This movie, this is the reason that people like me who are, they're not huge superhero movie fans. I mean, they like the good ones, and I like the really good ones, and I hate the really bad ones type of thing. I mean, this is why we get like tired of this genre. It's because of movies like this. I mean, I can't really even tell you the differences between all 9 X-Men movies. I couldn't tell you what, I mean, other than the Days of Future Past, which I really enjoyed as well. They're mostly missed for me. And it's just unfortunate because it's such a iconic comic book world, and I just think they've lost their way again, and they really don't know what to do with it anymore. You're right, Cody, they rehashed a lot of stuff from the past ones. Thought Oscar Isaac was bland in this, but I mean, you really couldn't tell it was him either way. I mean, why get Oscar Isaac to do something like this if, I don't know, it just didn't seem like you could have gotten anybody, and it would have been the same kind of character.
Well, yeah, you bury him under like layers and layers of makeup. It's really hard to even tell.
Right. But I mean, just overall, the storyline was really bland. And I think they just, sometimes I think producers and directors really put their heart and soul into a movie. And then sometimes they just, do some window dressing and throw another one out there just to continue the story. And I think that's where this one kind of landed. Who knows? I mean, again, it's so inconsistent that the next one might be amazing. You know what I mean? Well, you never know where these things are going to land.
I don't.
Just depending on who's behind the camera at the time.
I don't think that they, this is the oldest superhero franchise by far,
right,
in Hollywood.
2000.
This is since 2000, and it's essentially the same continuity, give or take. I mean, these are the same characters, and you get. Of course, you get Hugh Jackman again in this film.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're not really changing the tone at all. I mean, this isn't like Christopher Nolan coming in and flipping everything around.
It's not a reboot. But I think the biggest problem with the film is that it's a lot of – it just keeps setting stuff up. I think, Cody, you messaged me when you were done with the movie. It just kept setting stuff up and setting stuff up and setting stuff up. And it doesn't pay off. But it misses the point that we know these characters already. Even though they're being played by different actors, You know, like, we know Jean Grey. We know fucking we're more than familiar with Magneto. Not that Fassbender's stuff wasn't great, but he's so, like Cody said, he's so good in this part that, that you want to see more of him. But then when it gets to the final battle with Apocalypse, he's fucking floating there for 15 minutes.
While other people stare at him.
While other people stare at him. Jennifer Lawrence, who seems to be in this movie only because she's still under contract and she's such a huge star that they feel like they have to have her in there, doesn't even stay true to her character because she's all about fighting for mutants' rights, but she spends most of the movie, you know, in her quote disguise mode, which is looking like Jennifer Lawrence, just because you don't want to have Jennifer Lawrence in your movie and have her wearing fucking blue paint and red hair the whole time. And then there's so much going on that the plot is left like standing around for 10 minutes. I think I talked about this with you, Cody, the scene where Apocalypse makes Magneto a new helmet out of sand, which was kind of a cool little effect, but that means he's standing there on that fucking pyramid just waiting for the fight to start for like 10 minutes of movie time. Like, what's happening during this movie? Like, there's the plot just stops to check in with other characters.
Yeah.
And then even cameos, like, look, there's of course Wolverine's in this movie, as the Weapon X version of himself, where he's all, you know, bestial and not, you know, doesn't know who he is. And even that fucking scene takes forever. That thing is way too long.
I thought that was the best scene in the movie because he's just like kicking ass for a few minutes.
Yeah, I still think it could have been way shorter though. And I don't think Sophie Turner is very good in this movie as Jean Grey. Mm-mm. The resolution to the conflict is pretty stupid and nonsensical. And I think probably the biggest issue with the plot is it's too big in scope. Because all the other X-Men movies have been about protecting mutants. You know, yeah. Like, you know, it's some of it's been very thin allegories for, you know, homosexual rights and things like that. You know, discrimination in the 60s with X-Men First Class. However, this one's just another we got to save the world plot.
You know, what's staggering to me is that on paper, X-Men Days of Future Past should have been a disaster because you're like you've got like time jumping, time travel stuff that kind of worth like existing franchises from.
I think we lost Kiko, by the way.
Okay. Well, you have time travel stuff that's existing from a franchise that was a decade earlier, and yet it somehow like sets the table and lets them do whatever they want now because they've kind of established like you can bring in old characters and new characters and all this stuff, and like this is what you follow it up with.
Yeah, I think Days of Future Past has a little firmer ground to stand on because it was based on a comic book, although it changed a lot of elements for it. So the story was already there in theory. This one, it plays like a reintroduction of the characters. It's almost like another fucking reboot. It's just a mess of plot that doesn't really ever go anywhere. I think that the new additions to the cast, like Olivia Munn as Psylocke, I think Olivia Munn's pretty awful. Yeah. She looks good, but her performance is not great. Just overall, way too much going on, not enough room for anything to breathe, and a lot of stuff that doesn't really matter. Anyway, what'd you think, grade-wise?
I would probably say it's about a C-.
I'm at a C, personally. We don't have Kiko's grade because we lost him on Skype. So, all right, that's going to do it for this week. If you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. You can call us at 920-FILM-210. That's 920-3456-210. Find us on Twitter at Cinesnob, on Facebook at Cinesnob Critic. Listen to our guest spot on the Critics Circle on radiobrave.com. Download the TuneIn app. That's the best way to hear it on the road, I think. You can plug your headphones into your phone, stream it to your Bluetooth in your car.
Use your tape deck.
I've done that before, by the way, using those old school tape things. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done that. So yeah, listen to that. And also all of our other colleagues, in the Houston Film Critics Society. Like I said, you can get a different take every week because you got a rotating group of people. There probably weren't as many dick jokes last week, as there were this week. And we kind of cut it down on the dick jokes. We could have had a lot more dick jokes, I think, but we
could have slid more in there.
We could have, really, really packed that thing full of dick jokes. Yeah. Anything else, Cody? Look for our announcement for our next screening at the Draft House, right?
Yeah. sorry, I was checking to see if we had any new reviews on iTunes, and we do.
Oh, we do? Wow.
It's from Goodfellas Lover, who had left us a thing before, and it says, "Remember when you guys did podcasts and wrote reviews every week? Where have you guys been? Love you guys. Come back. We're trying."
When was that review dated?
May 9th.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were in a bit of a lull then. We're trying, Goodfellas Lover. Just stay subscribed. We've got 81 episodes now in the books. Here's to 81 more, guys.
We got a little complacent, we'll admit. The early season blues are easy to fall under, and but I think we're getting back in a rhythm here. Except for you're not going to be here next week.
I'm going on vacation next week, and we need to talk about Warcraft if it's as bad as it looks.
Yeah, if you check Rotten Tomatoes, there are multiple references to Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, so we won't get to that next week, but we can pick it up the following week. I don't know what's the big release the following week.
Well, if you'll give me just one.
All right, I'm gonna
stall for me.
I'm gonna him and haw and foofarall and say rhubarb and a bunch of stuff. You know, the rhubarb.
So the week after that will be Finding Dory.
Oh yeah.
And Central Intelligence.
Ooh. What's your take on Finding Nemo?
I love Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's again kind of the Pixar that was still in my wheelhouse a little bit.
You were a kid. Finding Nemo, you were a kid then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, I wasn't a kid, I was 14, but I mean that's you know.
You had a tiny fin. God, Finding Nemo came out in 2003. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Time flies. That's to me, a little, that airs a little too far on the sugary sweet side of Pixar for me. Mm-hmm. I still like it. And I still think it's a great film. Don't get me wrong, but that and like Monsters, Inc. And, even Inside Out are a little too like it makes my teeth hurt. They're so sweet.
Yeah,
you know, I prefer
you need something like nihilistic, like WALL-E.
yeah, or something objectivist like The Incredibles, and yeah, WALL-E's pretty nihilist. I gotta admit, I feel like I was very close to being one of those fat people on a ship. I love the random Fred Willard in WALL-E, by the way.
Yeah, the one human.
I never did see Monsters University. Now that I think about it,
it was not great.
Yeah.
It was in that was in the middle of that Pixar slump of like it was like Monsters University and Brave and
oh yeah, I didn't like Brave. I like a because I'm not a 4-year-old boy. I don't like the Cars movies. But by this time next week, I'll have ridden that goddamn Cars ride at Disneyland, Disney California Adventure. It's funny. There's a lot of in Disney California Adventure, Cars is like the big deal. You know,
mm-hmm.
They have that huge Cars land. And I just don't like those movies.
I haven't seen them.
You've never seen either of the Cars movies?
I have not.
Oh, wow. The first one has some charm. The second one, you'd better like Larry the Cable Guy. Because you're getting, it's a Larry the Cable Guy movie. The second one has a crazy, interesting opening scene. That's basically a James Bond movie, but with cars. It's really weird. But the first one has some interesting charm, but yeah. Anyway, it's probably Pixar's most blatant, like, look, we make $1 billion off these fucking toys every year, so eat this shit and like it. Yeah. Cars. You should watch Cars just for the sake of having seen it. I think they're all coming to Netflix this fall, by the way.
Yeah, that's the word.
That's the word, is that all the Disney shit is coming to Netflix, which is actually really cool, by the way, because that stuff gets hard to find.
I wonder if that includes Star Wars.
I don't know. I remember Canadian Netflix or something had the exclusive rights to it for a while. Like, if you could, used to be able to spoof your IP address to get Canadian Netflix.
I feel like Disney is heading down a black hole of these live action adaptations.
No, you didn't see Alice in Wonderland, Alice Through the Looking Glass, did you?
No.
No. I think it was actually a tiny step forward from Alice in Wonderland. I still don't think it's good, and I think Johnny Depp is the weakest link in this stuff. He had a really bad couple of weeks.
Yep.
Not only with Alice Through the Looking Glass bombing, but all that other stuff, all that other unpleasantness. But anyway, I'm curious about the Beauty and the Beast live-action remake that had a trailer drop, I think, earlier this week or last week.
Yeah. Apparently, the views of that have surpassed the views for the Force Awakens trailer.
I don't even understand that metric for YouTube.
Like, what, views?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, Force Awakens trailer gets mirrored everywhere. Like, you know, it's not... Like, maybe on the official Disney channel? I don't know how they're measuring these views. Like, are they measuring it across all channels? Or
I don't
what?
Know.
Anyway, it's stupid. It's like when they talk about the Ghostbusters being the most disliked movie trailer ever because people are awful.
Yeah.
And hate women. Like you, Cody.
I love women.
Oh, me too. And I
ladies, if you're listening.
Cody loves women. And I'm totally down for this new Ghostbusters, by the way. I mean, it could suck. It could very well suck. But I'm not writing it off sight unseen. Like some other dumb shits. Speaking specifically to that angry video game nerd guy. You saw that video, right?
I did see that.
Yeah. Fuck that guy. But I want that fucking Star Trek V thing he has on his desk in that video. So... Anyway, this has gone off the rails. So, on that note, my name is Jared Kingery.
And I'm Cody Villafano.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.